So, welcome to the next edition of the Road Business Podcast. With me today I have Fiona McSwain, who is the Chief Customer Officer, no less, of Simply Business. Hi Fiona, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm very good, thank you Adrian.
So, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, so I am Chief Customer Officer. What that means, because it's a bit of a trendy title, means that I'm responsible essentially for the customer experience, end to end.
Okay.
So that means I'm responsible for acquiring the customers, so I look after marketing, but then also make sure from a customer experience perspective, the feedback that we get from a customer at the point of purchase, all the way through to experiencing the product, and for our insurance purposes, the claims, I'm responsible for that feedback and making sure that we make a difference by making a change as a result of it.
Is that also responsible for support and service and things as well? Or
no,
is that slightly different?
That reports into the operations director.
Okay.
So I'm really much more focused on managing that insight and making sure the operations director and others make a change as a result of that insight.
Okay. Fantastic. Oh, and that's for Simply Business.
That is for Simply Business.
Tell us about that.
So most people haven't heard of us because our brand recognition is really low.
I think I have insurance from you.
But we're the UK's largest small business insurance provider.
Okay.
And actually, believe it or not, we've got over 330,000 customers in the UK, and they're all small businesses or landlords.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. What was the thing that's most impressive, I think, that you've achieved recently? Is that you entered the Sunday Times 100 Best Small Companies, or mid-size companies to work for list. And last year you came top. You won the league.
We did.
Up from the 21st the previous year now. Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I know a lot of people I've spoken to a number of people that have entered that competition. And the first thing I always kind of want to ask is, why did you enter it? Because I think a lot of people have all sorts of different reasons about why they enter it. So why did you, Simply Business, enter it?
I think it's primarily because, as a company, we're just really proud of what we've achieved. And the Sunday Times award was really about us showing to other people what we've done.
Right.
And spreading the word.
Okay.
And in particular, our chief executive has been, you know, really a charging force on making sure that we embrace the company culture that we've got.
Yeah.
But secondly, you know, our advocacy of the way we are was really, I think particularly for him, a moment in time for us to start telling other people about it.
Okay.
We've got no problem recruiting people. In fact, to your point, we went from a small category where we were 21st. Up to the mid-size category, because we've had over 100 people that we've employed over the past year.
Wow.
So we've now just topped over, got about 320 employees, so we're still pretty small. So we've got about one employee for every 1,000 customers. But we just wanted to start spreading the word and actually evangelising why we felt that we've got the best company to work for in
Fantastic.
The UK.
Well, I guess it's... by winning the competition, it goes some way or a long way to kind of proving that, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, so we met a little while ago, a few months ago, and at an insurance conference, no less. How exciting.
I think it was a broker event, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think you and I were the only people who weren't wearing suits at the time. I think there's a lot of formality.
There was a lot of formality in the room, and I was thinking, oh dear.
It's ironic there being so much formality. It's definitely based on the history of the insurance sector.
Oh, I think so.
When you really think about what insurance is, it's actually it's a service that protects people.
Well, it's like an emergency service.
Exactly, and it's about supporting people when they're fearful or when there's a crisis. And so it almost feels at odds that an insurance provider should be so formal and rigorous, when in fact they're actually a comfort to people. So it's
but if you think about them as sometimes an emergency service, then what do all emergency services have?
The uniform.
And maybe the suit and the formality of that is their uniform.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I believe that. I'm just kind of trying to defend them a little bit. But the interesting thing you were telling me about the conference was how one of the things that you think is really driving your success is that you're putting the customer at the heart of everything that you do, building that kind of, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, alluded to it, the thing about the culture. Can you tell me a little bit about the culture? Because I think sometimes people talk about culture, But there's sometimes a lot. There's a big difference between talking about culture and actually doing culture, because there's a lot of talking. You read that and you go, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
So it'd be really interesting to hear about the kind of culture that you've developed and what it means and how you describe it and all those different sort of things, and how you make it real, because that's the most important part of it.
Yeah.
It's not about the talk, it's about the do.
Yeah.
Right?
Completely. And I think quite unusually, albeit it's very natural, our customer manifesto that we publish is exactly the same as our internal company values. So
is that those things?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Ah. So that definitely shows that we do publish them. Since Adrian's just shown me a list of them that he's done in research. But
shall I read them out?
Yeah.
So five core principles are, and it's both internally and externally, is first one, to be human but not sloppy or careless, to be clear but not patronising, to be revolutionary but not impulsive, to be knowledgeable but not lofty, to be professional but not corporate. Nice.
Exactly. And ultimately, if you live by those values, our belief is as staff and actually as customers, it's about the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. So small businesses have often become small businesses because the owner wants to be happier in what they do.
Sure.
Doesn't mean work-life balance, you know, and I think every single small business owner will tell you they probably work harder than they ever have done working for themselves, but it gives people the option to pursue their own agenda or their own, you know, happiness through hobbies or whatever else is they want to do. And I think we've taken that exact same ethos inside the company. That if our, and it sounds cheesy, but if your staff are happy, they're probably more likely to enjoy what they're doing, do it better, listen to each other, be more engaged.
So I'm really interested in why you, the caveat that you just put on that sort of it sounds cheesy. Why does it sound cheesy?
I think the pursuit of happiness has
become... the idea about kind of employees. If your employees are happy, then it's more likely to live.
So many books talk about the pursuit of happiness with staff and customers, but it's always inauthentic. You know, often you hear it at board level, but you don't necessarily see it resonated in every fabric of the company.
Right.
And often, to me, I've been pretty promiscuous in my career, so I've seen a lot of companies, and quite often people talk about being customer-oriented or customer-focused, but it starts as an external message and it ends at customers' call centres. And so I think for us, we're small enough to actually embrace the values all the way through the company.
Yeah.
And 66% of our employees are already directly customer-facing because they are consultants at the end of a phone or on an email. But for the remaining, 34%, we're completely open about anyone speaking directly to the customer.
Okay.
And there's no fear, or if you say something that you shouldn't on Twitter, or if you speak to them over the phone or via email, and you may be a developer, it doesn't really matter if you say something that wasn't quite the company rhetoric or on message, because we would rather people say how they feel and be authentic. But then on the back of that, we can always apologise. So it's really about giving staff the freedom to be much more customer oriented and just going back
into... Well, to be human, like you say.
Exactly.
Humans make mistakes sometimes.
Completely. And also keeping it simple. We shouldn't have a policy, for example, that is unclear to a customer, because it's not... You wouldn't speak to your nana about, contractual subcontractors. I don't even know what it really means. So that's why we just try to keep things really, really simple and not use insurance language. But going back to the point about the culture and embracing it, the one thing that we do to give people that balance is we offer things like yoga in the office. People can we have cookery bake-offs. We have opportunities to level up or learn different things that are completely unrelated to your current role. And the second thing is we're self-organised, which means that we give people a problem that they have to solve, and we then cluster people from different, what would naturally be different functions around that particular problem. So it means that the organisation doesn't have a hierarchy. The organisation has a series of objectives that are influenced by a series of problems that we then are tasked to solve and therefore improve.
So you don't have an organogram
We have no organogram.
You just have a bunch of names on a piece of paper.
Exactly. And if you came into the office, you wouldn't know who was a board director or who wasn't, because we all sit amongst each other in an open plan office.
Nice. So that's not quite... that's interesting, because there's all sorts of different people that are... experiment with different types of organisations, because sometimes that can be how we structure, and the boxes that we try and fit people into can be the thing that drives and informs kind of what we think and how we act and all of those different sort of things.
Yeah.
And some people are going from more formal structures and how they kind of struggle with silos and things, and then now some people are starting to experiment with what they call holacracy, but self-organised teams. I like it. Around problems.
And if the problem needs any development, for example, we have a development track that sits within that problem group.
Okay.
And so therefore they've got complete right and liberty to develop and build and test on a prototype and then launch any kind of feature or service or new application that's required to meet that problem.
So that's, I mean, is that, I mean, not wanting to kind of, in kind of a common sort of present day kind of parlance, that would almost sound like it's like you're taking a very agile organisational approach to pretty much everything.
Yeah.
So how do people know when things are, so what happens when things, when you identify a problem and you organise, then there's a team is assembled, how do you know when it's finished, and then what happens next? Is it just like on to the next problem that's on the list?
It's all iterative.
Okay.
So it's all about continuous development and continuous learning. So a classic example will be, just like most companies, we've got a new business growth objective. And one thing we notice is we may get 100,000 customers in, but we were finding that not all of them were receiving a quote successfully every month.
Right.
And so the problem was, how do you improve conversion? And in particular, we noticed that there was a category, that what we call the professional segment,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are accountants and bookkeepers and consultants, and they were converting less well than the tradesman segment.
Okay.
So we knew that we could improve it, because we've already seen success in other segments.
Yeah.
So we deep dived into that segment. So we had an analyst, we had a developer, we had a product manager, and we had a UX specialist.
Right.
And one thing we noticed about many of the professionals, in particular accountants and consultants, is that they were pivoting on the quote a lot. They were changing different questions and answers
right.
in order to see what happened to the price of that insurance quote. Because you can quote online for your insurance product, say public liability or professional indemnity insurance.
Sure.
And so instead of what happened is they kept going back up the question set, changing the variable and coming back down to see what happened to their quote in the quote journey. So
cheapskates.
But it actually the behaviour, you could imagine it for someone like a management consultant, because they tend to be very good at research and investigating different options. So we created a really simple quote comparison module that allows you to pivot and change on the same page every variable to just automatically, dynamically see the price change.
Right.
And we've noticed they use it a lot. That was a problem. The tech team then solved it through changing the UX and the interface, and we subsequently launched it.
Okay.
And actually now it's improved the conversion rate significantly.
Fantastic.
So that was just an example where it's only a small discrete project, but ultimately that team's rewarded because they've hit one of our corporate goals.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great. And it empowers people, because...
Well, that's what I was going to ask about that. I mean, it's like, so the you know, the culture and then the organisation and everything else. I mean, how does that... I mean, and then also your promiscuity around kind of working for a large number of different types of organisations.
Yeah.
How does all your experience compare to what you currently see in terms of productivity and retention and just people's ability and enthusiasm about delivering better service and a better experience?
So,
is it like night and day?
First, if I get feedback from staff, one of the reasons why people like working for Simply Business is that they were used to working for a company where they put a business case in.
Yeah.
And then once a month it went to the business case kind of authority, who reviewed it, gave you feedback, you went back to finance, changed the case, went back again. And maybe 6 months later, your case might be approved. And then that means you're in the development cycle.
Right.
And people get frustrated because the energy and the excitement about that original case has gone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You, So whereas
you want an idea, you want to act on it.
Yeah. Whereas here, people have got the liberty. If it's a great idea and it's solving a problem we can see today, we'll put people around it and resolve it.
Okay.
And then keep iterating it. So people feel more rewarded because their energy in that project is still there. But your point, Adrian, on does it improve productivity? That's not one of our goals.
Okay.
You know, ultimately, I think companies in the UK are already highly productive, and we're not trying to squeeze more out of people.
Yeah.
We're actually trying to make it a more enjoyable environment to work in.
Well, it's interesting. There was a long time ago, I spoke to a guy called Saeed Hassan. He runs a CX software firm called Response Tech out in Seattle, I think. And anyway, he's originally from Lancashire, and he gave a very sort of Lancastrian, sort of Lancashire sort of type answer when I asked him about sort of, we were talking about engagement and employee engagement and things, and he said, I think it's really simple. He said, I think if you ask them to do work that matters, so they can see the kind of it matters to the big picture, pay them a fair wage, and ask for their opinion and do something about it.
Yeah.
He says, do those things and you're pretty much kind of got it sorted.
Yeah.
And it's like, I find that it's, we have a natural tendency as human beings to overcomplicate things.
Mm.
And I think it's like, and we almost rail against how sometimes things are really simple.
Yeah.
And it was almost a bit like, if we make things more complicated, it makes us feel more clever.
Yeah.
And that's, but it can actually, it complicates things and it, you know, and it destroys the simplicity, and there's power in simplicity, and people want that, really. They want the flexibility, but then they want the you know, you talk about, you want people to enjoy things, but actually enjoy things by actually giving them the opportunity to solve problems, to work with different sort of people, to achieve things and stuff, just to be more to do more at work, as it were, rather than clocking in and clocking out.
Yeah.
So, fascinating.
I totally agree. And it's living it authentically and actually delivering it, you know, within the organisation so people feel the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an example recently is we've been encouraging remote working and home working. And you really have to trust your staff when you move into that type of kind of culture, because they're not sitting in front of you, and we don't really like to give hard and fast, you know, micromanaged goals. We want to keep embracing people to do what they think is right. So trust has been a really important factor in all of that. And the second thing is, we're not trying to do it to say if you're sitting at home, you'll be working harder and you'll be, you know, you won't have that commute, so you can squeeze another hour and a half out of your day. It's actually just trying to make people feel a bit more liberated.
Well, I think so. I mean, but I also think it's. I guess you've also got to get to the point where you've got to say, well, we're going to focus on the outcomes rather than the inputs.
Yeah.
And if the inputs are bums on seats, kind of 9 to 5 and this sort of stuff, it's like that's kind of fine. But if you focus on the outcomes, does it really matter how you get there?
Yeah.
As long as the outcomes are like, as long as you're not breaking any rules along the way.
Yeah.
But as long as the outcomes are kind of what you got. Now, are you paying people for? I guess the question you've got to ask yourself is, when you're paying somebody a salary, are you paying them the salary because, and the salary is calculated on an hourly rate for 37, 40 hours kind of a week and according to whatever directive?
Yeah.
And that's basically kind of what, so you're basically paying for a body and a brain, or actually paying them that salary because actually you're paying them that salary to achieve those objectives.
Yeah.
And actually, it doesn't. They could work for 2 hours a week and achieve the same objectives. And if you're okay with that,
You know, a couple of things on that. One is, we don't have pay parity. We don't say that everyone within this job description has exactly the same pay. We pay people on their ability to be agile and to be able to solve the problems such that it improves the numbers.
Right.
So every week, every Monday morning, we have a flash on where the numbers are in terms of new business, renewals, you know, our EBITDA. So it's completely transparent and everyone knows exactly what the status is. But that's combined also with both company-wide retrospectives we do once a month, where people can feedback totally without fear anything they feel about the company in terms of the way it works or what it's trying to achieve or how people are organised, together with group individual, those problem-solving group retrospectives, where people can shout out. We have something called Simply Brilliant,
right,
which is where people can shout about what staff member has been really fantastic in that team.
Okay.
And we can individually reward that person because they've been, as part of their staff feedback, everyone said that they were the one who really delivered. So that person ultimately, if they're always being singled out as someone who has really helped deliver, then they're the ones who ultimately are going to be better paid than someone who, you know, maybe isn't, could be the gel, isn't necessarily the person who is delivering, you know, more value on that top line.
There's
something. It's hard though, actually.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. It's something that you have to kind of work towards. I know that somebody else I kind of spoke to, I love this idea because I think it's a really simple way. Is that the because oftentimes when you talk about measuring service or solving problems or whatever, the person that gets recognised as a reward is the person that actually pushes something over the finish line, as it were, that answers the call, solves that problem, whatever.
Yeah.
But actually, and this is where there's a lesson from sort of sport that I really like, is when people have talked about, rather than measuring just goals, we also measure assists.
Yeah.
And so that's what somebody's taken that idea and sort of applied it into a business sort of thing. So we talk about service or experience, or somebody doing a good job. It's like you recognise the goal scorer, but you also recognise who made the assist.
Yeah.
And so there's that sort of the different sort of levels that you get from that. And I just think, because it's just a concept that people just understand.
Yeah.
It's like, so who made the cross and who knocked it in the goal, and or who gave the scoring pass, or you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. But the other thing, I heard about from another firm which you might like is they have this continuous learning approach. What they do is they're like an IT support company, and what they do is they take random support tickets, like on a monthly week, every couple of weeks or something, and they pick out a couple and they give it to some people, a couple of people that are in their support team, support engineers, and go, right, I want you to review that, review what you like, what you don't like about it, what you think you could have done better. But they do that anonymously, and then they send it back to the people that were actually responsible for that support ticket.
Yeah.
Just because it's just a learning mechanism.
Yeah.
But it's like it's about them investing in themselves to learn, but also to spread knowledge and different approaches across the organization, across the organization, across
that
team.
Idea.
But just to do it sort of not, so it's not, it doesn't come hierarchical, and it's not personal, and it's all random.
Yeah.
But it goes back to the people that actually, and that person is quite able to kind of talk about kind of the feedback that they've got and what they've learned from it, sort of thing. But it's that whole just them, everybody committing to everybody else and being open and honest and things, but doing it in a way that's it is anonymous, but it's so therefore it doesn't become personal.
Yeah.
And it's all done under this idea around just being constructive. Now some people might go like, oh, if it's an open and honest culture, then you should be able to put your name to it. And you're like, well, yeah, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is like we are people. We do have feelings. Different people have different relationships with different sort of people.
Yeah.
So you need to take that element out and actually just focus on the learning.
Yeah.
And the opinion.
Yeah.
It's just about sharing opinions.
Yeah.
So that's quite a nice idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
So it's something you might want to take back and share with your team. But here's the thing. So I'm thinking about that, and I'm also thinking about you've got a call in about 2 or 3 minutes that you need to get on, and it's for people that are more important than myself because of the board. So if I was to say, very quickly, fascinating about what you're doing, really interesting, and I'm sure we could go into this for a long time, but if I were to ask you, based on your experience, what would be your top tips for managers, execs, and other sort of people in a similar sort of position, if they wanted to bring the most out of their teams and build that sort of really customer-focused, customer-centric sort of culture, what would you say to them?
I think the first thing is really match the values that you have got with your customers and you're publishing externally, that you should match your internal values. Because any discrepancy means that you're not going to be aligned and your staff are not going to be aligned when they do talk to customers.
Sure.
I think that's the number one. I think the number two is when you do get either staff or customer feedback that's really negative,
yeah,
you know, that could be a complaint, but could just be an informal point of feedback. We get about 5,000 a month points of feedback from customers and prospects a month.
Yeah.
It's to really rank them in order of extremism.
Okay.
And even if it's only 15 points of feedback in that month, those 15 people are probably representing, you know, at least 100 times that in terms of your customer or prospect base.
Silent complaints.
Yeah, so really, if you solve them, your overall customer happiness and advocacy is probably going to go up significantly.
Yeah.
We also measure that customer feedback through customer advocacy and NPS.
Right.
But also in level of effort or friction.
Yeah.
Because we feel that if you create a friction-free environment for a customer, forget all the widgets and the wizards and the you know, new little product peripherals you could add to a customer. If you make it easy, I think customers are much more likely to buy and rebuy from you.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty simple ethos.
Yeah.
And then I think finally is always get feedback, like you say, anonymously or positively from proactively from your staff and employees, just about how things are and whether they're happy. And I think people will ultimately tell you if they're not happy, and if they're not, it's accountability from your board, you know, or your operations team to actually resolve that.
Okay.
And I think if you're not happy, then either leave your company, don't be a customer, and find someone else who will provide that.
Brilliant.
That's why we're here. Okay?
So that's fantastic. And now, my final question I always ask at the end of these interviews is this. Is there anything you like to shamelessly plug?
thank you. You know, in a way, our values for our customers is really what we're about. But more importantly, you know, you mentioned before this about Seth Godin,
mm-hmm.
and the messages that were stood out to me was have a fantastic product, and all marketing, you know, and services is about making sure people know that product exists.
Yeah.
And for us at Simply Business, you know, we feel we've really built a fantastic product with a great service.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, it's to us, it's not about insurance, but it's an insurance product with fixed policies and then a, you know, very clear reason why you can't claim.
Yeah.
You know, which is a poorly trusted sector that we're in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually about making sure that you have a great product, and we also then proactively work with that customer to prevent them from claiming.
Right.
And when they do claim, we know it's a crisis, so making sure that experience is easy and as quick as possible. And that's why we exist.
Perfect.
And in fact, we use our customers. If you are a customer agent, then we'd like to use you too. But we use our customers in all of our advertising campaigns, our radio, our billboard, our case studies.
I have a voice for radio. I don't think I have a face for TV.
Our strap line at the moment is, you know, that we're proud to insure the businesses that are building Britain's economy, because small businesses are the unsung heroes in the UK.
Yeah.
And they're 95% of all of the private businesses in the UK. So there are 5.5 million of them, and they just don't get represented.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of why we're here.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Fiona, thank you.
It's
been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me too. Thank you, Adrian.